evening, ladies and gentlemen. I think we'll call the meeting to order. Welcome to you all this evening. We'll call the meeting to order at 6:03. As always, I remind you of the oath you've taken, and as always, we will begin with attendance. President Kuzmu.
He's present.
Sorry, folks, let me just get you to quiet down just a hair so I can make sure we do attendance. President Kuzmu?
Present.
Vice President Schellen?
Schellen, present.
Vice President Woods?
Present.
Vice President Lay?
Present.
Vice President Lau?
Present.
Governor Kelly?
Present.
Councillor Battelle?
Present.
Councillor Borden?
Present.
Councillor Mills? Councillor Hanwell?
Present.
Councillor Bannister?
Present.
Councillor Chabone? Councillor Mohammed?
Present.
Ms. Maru for Councillor Gruelke?
Present.
Councillor Minarski?
Present.
Councillor Valdez? Councillor Corbett? Councillor Redmond?
Present.
Councillor Hamid?
Present.
Councillor Morris? Councillor Nguyen?
Here.
Councillor Champagne is here via Skype. Yep.
Present.
There he is. Councillor Speakman? Councillor Hodgson?
Present.
Councillor Huang?
Here.
Councillor Zhang?
Present.
Councillor Grehan? Councillor Binchik?
Present.
Councillor Douglas?
Yep.
And Mr. Dumichel?
Yep.
All right. With that, just a couple of speakers' announcements. Just a note on the agenda. You'll note on the late additions, there's an item 6C. Chellen moves that upon the recommendation of the Policy Committee, Students' Council amend the fall reading week policy. There were some administrative challenges that presented themselves last week, and unfortunately this wasn't able to make it onto the main agenda, although it probably should have, because this was more an administrative issue and less of a people just dilly-dallying issue, and because the policy committee chair, I believe, you should have all received a copy of a little bit of information about this fairly early last week, so while I don't generally sort of as a practice encourage that sort of thing, it's really beneficial in a situation like this where it is an administrative error and it helps to make things easier for me in terms of being able to move it. So pursuant to standing orders, I am going to make this item a special order and move it to the appropriate place on the main order paper, so we will deal with it today. We will make it item 6A on the order paper. Secondly, GovCamp, first of all, thank you to everyone who attended, and for those of you that did attend, I encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to please complete the survey so that we can make sure that we take your feedback and make it better for next year. As well, for those of you that weren't able to attend, and for those of you that were, we had a strategic planning session for council. We're going to be distributing the sort of outcome document, a rough document of what came out of that presentation. We'll be distributing that to you in the next week or so, and we're also going to be trying to plan some sort of a session on campus so that all members of council can participate if you weren't able to make it to the council retreat in terms of strategic planning. So stay tuned for more information on that. With that, that's all I have for speakers' business. Actually, one more point. Keep an eye out on your email over the next couple of weeks. CAC has been discussing the current venue we're in and whether there are any more appropriate venues on campus that might suit our needs a little bit better. So there's a possibility that our meeting room may change, so we'll be sure to give you plenty of notice, but just be sure to be checking your email. And if you're unsure, just email myself or Nicole, and we can certainly get you the details. With that, we will move on to presentations. Item 2A, sub-renovation financing strategy update by Mark Dumichel, presented by Vice President Lay. Do we have a seconder for that presentation? Thank you, Councillor Zhang. Is there any objection to hearing this presentation? Vice President Lay?
The presentation by Mr. Dumichel, sponsored by Mr. President, I'm presenting.
Yes, I believe, is that what I said? Oh, my apologies. Okay, so presented by Mark Dumichel, sponsored by Vice President Lay. Councillor Zhang will second that. Any objection to hearing the presentation? Seeing none, we will move ahead with the presentation. Mr. Doomshell, you have 30 minutes from when you get all set up. Absolutely. Councillor Champagne, just a note for you, I have to turn off my view of the Skype, so if you need to, just unmute and tell me to add you to the speakers list if need be. Okay.
Come on. Here we go. All right. Well, I'll try to keep this reasonably brief, so you had a really short meeting like 2 weeks ago, but we'll see how that goes. I'm here to talk about our financing and phasing strategy for our renovation. Kind of outline what was approved last year and kind of keep you up to date and give you a chance to ask any questions that you have. So this project of financing, the project of financing strategy was approved by last year's council, and I'm going to go over it today. It's a little complex, so I've tried to make it as simple as I can, but please feel free to ask questions at any time and at the end. It is a little complicated, but you learn a lot about the SU as a whole just by watching the presentation. We're also going to email some material to you in the next day or so. Specifically, we'll be sending along what the Board of Finance and Property Committee has passed along to the Board of Governors, just to see where we are with that. And there's some additional project information at subrental.ca, a site that Craig has set up for us. So where are we in our project? First thing to note is last year, Council approved two fundraising strategies. The executive got the option to pursue two different fundraising strategies. One of them involves using the Alberta Capital Financing Authority to finance the project, and the second one was about using commercial lenders, like the Bank of Montreal or something. Now, we've decided to pursue ACFA funding. For a couple of reasons. And I'll explain what that is. ACFA is Alberta Capital Finance Authority. It's a crown corporation that loans out money to specific organizations. So only certain kinds of organizations can apply. We can't. The university has to get the money from ACFA. So they've agreed to do that on our behalf. Or they are in the process of agreeing to do that on our behalf. And then they will, and then they are not allowed to lend us the money, but they will give us a grant that we will help them repay. So we decided to pursue ACFA funding for a couple of reasons. One is, if we get a commercial loan, we have to put up 25% of the cost of the renovation from our own resources and funds. And that is a lot of money. So we always want to manage our finances conservatively. So we like having a big bank account. So we have a big cushion. So we're a little leery about that. We can do it, but we're a little leery about it. Secondly, with a commercial loan, you can only really lock in for 10 maybe 15 if you're really, really lucky. But if we go into commercial loan, it's a 25-year term loan that we need to get. So there is uncertainty about the interest rates going forward that we want to avoid. The ACFA gives really good long-term rates, far better than the bank. So we can get a 20 to 25-year loan from the ACFA at what a bank would charge for a 5-year loan. It does require, however, University and Government of Alberta, that's GOA, approvals. And by government of Alberta, it actually has to go to cabinet. There's something called the Order of Council, which the cabinet has to pass, which authorizes ACFA to lend the money. Where we are currently is we're in the university approval phase. It's gone through BFPC. There were no questions. It was a unanimous decision. It went great. So we expect it also to go very similar, easily through Bob on June 21st. We're going to June 21st, right? Yeah, <actually. laughs> Okay. So this does create for us some time issues. Let me just explain that a little bit. We don't know the final date of government approval. For one thing, they're all going to be taking off for the summer break, by the way, and so cabinet won't be distributed. And secondly, there's a lot of things that happen to them. So we don't actually have a specific time frame. This creates some real challenges for us. We do expect it in a few months. We're hoping to get it in September or October would be not optimal, but we're hoping September, and we are going to try to email the minister to keep it moving through the cabinet. Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And here's the catch. Now, we could just take a flyer because we can make a case to get a commercial loan just through the whole project. And we can use that as a backup plan and just go ahead and start with it right now. The problem is if you start making a really big public display of your construction. So if you do anything to the exterior of the building, or a really public display, or a really big one that is beyond your ability to handle internally financially, the government views that as them being pressured. And understandably so. If we had a student group went and spent a bunch of money and then came to us and said, oh yeah, by the way, you can pay for this, we'd say, like, no, we can't. It's not. You guys come to us first. And the government's very much the same way. So we cannot, we can only be part of the, so this creates a real problem for us. When there is a delay, that creates a few problems for us. Increases our costs, so weather, it means we push it further into the winter season, which means there's increased costs associated with construction in the winter. There's risk of cost escalation. So as it moves further out, the chances are that the commodity prices that we've been quoted so far will change and they may go up. We've also run into increasing competition with the major projects going on downtown for contractors. So we're concerned about that. We're also concerned about our team, because they've got to make a living. They can't sit around waiting for us to decide. About them, the key ones that we've lined up for this project, getting assigned other projects and us getting assigned somebody over here or not. So whoever's been with us from the beginning when we kind of get around to doing it. So we have a bit of an issue here. So how do we square that circle and move forward expeditiously, efficiently, and cost-effectively? So we keep the team together, so we can try to keep our costs down, while still not upsetting the government, because we still want the money. Well, we'd always planned to do phasing of the project. So what we're going to do, what we've started actually, is you're proceeding with phase one. We have phased the project into two phases, the second phase actually is two sub-phases, and we can move to phase one without really risking the government financing and without creating any undue financial stress for us. That's what I'm going to explain today. The benefits are we can stay on schedule, we have some savings, and we get to keep our team together. There are two questions that the councilor might have about this: is can we afford to proceed with phase one, and what happens if the government budget does not approve our financing? We do not view the not approving it as being a very likely outcome. We have talked to politicians. The bureaucrats have seen our what's called an opportunity paper. That's one of the things I'll mail up to you. They're generally pretty happy with it. Once the university submits something like this, it's not the government is actually taking money out of their budget. It's they issue ACFA issued bonds on behalf of the project and on behalf of the ACFA, and then they loan you the money. So it's not an expenditure for the government. We don't see any real reason why they won't go ahead with it. But there is that small risk that we need to be aware of. So, a bit about the phasing. We divide the project into two phases. Phase one, which is all the tower floors, the sixth floor, fourth floor, and the third floor. And phase two, which is the lower level and the exterior part. We've also mapped out as one of our fallback positions, an alternate phase two, which incorporates this area, which is currently where the chaplains are on the lower level, and this area here, which is currently where subtitles was. The construction phase will be a little bit more complicated than this when it's actually done. We are going to have phase one, as you see here, but when we actually do the lower level, we're going to break it into two phases. This will be one phase, all this stuff out here, and this will be phase 2B. Because while we're doing this, all the people who will be here will be in this space. So we need to let them stay there until we're done in this space. Any questions so far? That's a good sign. Alright. So can we afford to proceed with phase one? Now this is where I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers out at you. I'll bring it all together and you can ask any questions, but don't panic, it'll be said after the next slide. So the first answer, can we afford to proceed with phase one? The answer is yes. The cost of phase one construction plus two other things, completing planning on phase two on the whole project and doing some initial site work, which means there are some things that in order for us to build that atrium, that plaza out front, we have to move the gas line, phone line, we have to move some things around. And those things we're going to do now, because they don't really interrupt. We can afford to do them without really setting up any alarm bells in terms of getting ACFA financing. So that all comes to about $2.4 million. A big chunk of that is that site prep and and the asbestos abatement and the consultancy architect's costs, which aren't directly connected to the phase one physical, but actually gets done. And actually, we have at least half of those costs, unfortunately. Council already approved over $500,000. We spent about $250,000. That's pretty much mostly for design and consultants. We have currently $3.1 million cash on hand. That means we have $3.1 million in the bank. We have another $6.4 million in investments. This money is allocated across several reserves, such as the Student Involvement Endowment Foundation, we have a bunch of money in these investments. We don't have direct authority over some of those reserves, just so you're aware. We do, however, have $3.26 million of this money that is entirely ours. And in addition to that, there are some of the funds here, such as SEAF, which we are exploring the legalities of, and some ways that we can manage our health and dental plan, which would allow us to internally finance up to another $3.5 million. We also have an existing line of credit, it's not currently exercised, we don't need it right now, but we also have a standing line of credit for $650,000 on the Fed. So that's, we have enough money, we have enough resources, financial resources, to be able to afford this. Now I'm going to start talking about a bit of cash flow, and that'll be the next slide. In the summer, and actually every month except the months that we collect student dues, we run into loss. We do a lot of services, a lot of advocacy work, and we're basically spending. That's what student dues does. And over the course of the summer, we will spend about $1.6 to $1.7 million more over the 4 months than we take in. In October, we'll get $3.5 million in fee revenue. Some for general operations, some for dedicated reserves, but all the kinds of things that offset the $1.6 million that's going up and into net figures. So we'll get 3.5 from that. So that will punish our cash position in a worst-case scenario. If ACFA financing is approved, none of this will be met, because the $13 million from the government will flow almost direct, and the first few years will flow to our accounts. And we will have lots of money in the bank to do our renovation. So we have enough cash, theoretically, but you often have a lot of cash to have investments and things like that. So the question is, are we having this burn rate, which means how much money you're spending over what you're making over a period of time. We have to factor in our burn rate and how liquid our investments are. So do we have enough cash on hand? Can we generate enough cash flow to cover our expenses over the summer and do this renovation? So that's what this shows. First, we have that $3.1 million on hand. Our finance manager has done an analysis and identified that we have approximately $1.3 million in redeemable investments, and we have a line of credit of a little over $600,000. So our total available capital is a little over $5 million. Our phase one cost is $2.4 million. We've already spent $250,000. So our net that remains to be spent on phase one is $2.15 million. Over the course of the summer, we're going to burn another $1.6 million. $1.6 million before we get our money back. And which means our total cash flow required is about $3.75 million, give or take. That's pretty accurate in the sense that if we run a little bit behind that, it's about timing. Everything is 30 days past. Everything's net 30 million. When you're working in business. So, and we have $5 million available capital. We have cash flow need of about $3.75 million, and that means that we still have about $1.25 million if something goes horribly wrong, which we don't think will happen, but we see. Now, what happens? So that's the first question. Can we afford that? The answer is yes, and that's the conclusion that we come to. What happens if the government of Alberta does not approve the finance? This is a low probability scenario, but it is a scenario that we had to consider when doing this. If that happens, we'll have to come back to council because we'll have a decision to make. Do we secure commercial financing with some of the drawbacks that's going to entail? And there is a little bit more risk with that, which I'll get to in a second. or do we scale down the project to match our existing resources? So I'm going to talk about both those options here. First, commercial financing is feasible. It does require an internal investment. That means we have to put up somewhere between $2.6 and $3.8 million, 20-25% of the cost. You saw we have the cash, but we have to figure out some of the legal and accounting issues around our reserves, some of our reserves perhaps invested in the project, in which case we can then pay them back like it was a loan. So if they were making a 4% return or a 3 or 4% return, we have to pay them back at least that much so that they provide fair value for what would have been in the reserve. Under a commercial loan, we only have interest rate certainty for 10 years. This is somewhat mitigative in the fact this fee is indexed, which is very unusual for an outlook fee. We did it specifically because we want to be sure that this project is going to be affordable. The problem is, with all the changes in the budget recently, we don't really know what the enrollment of the university is going to be in the future. So even though it's indexed, our fee revenue might go down if enrollment drops 10 or 15%. So that's a risk that we have to weigh at the time. The second option is to simply scale the project down and still do a phase two, but a much smaller one. And we have to do a part of phase two, the modified phase two I talked about before, in order to meet the referendum requirements. The fee is already approved to be charged in September 2014. Last year's council did that. But that's based on the assumption that we hit our referendum requirements, or at least until the majority of the spirit of them, that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing, what we told students we would do. And to do that, we have to make some more changes that go beyond just the tower. Otherwise, we won't be able to find that. The referendum approved fee is sufficient for. Now, the good thing about that is, and I'm going to show you this in the next slide, if we do scale it back, it'll be very easy for us to repay. Like, remarkably easy for us to repay, because the fee is of a substantial scale, and we've already decided to set aside a certain amount of money from our operating revenue. That is, it's relatively trivial for us to pay back in 5 years, removing the interest rate risk. So by the numbers. So phase one and phase two are planned scope, what we expect to do, and what we have to do in a worst case scenario. So under both those scenarios, the phase one and planning costs are about the same. If we have to reduce the scope, we can save $10 million by reducing the scope. And that changes the cost of the project from 13.4 to 3.4 million. I'll also note this phase two is a lot higher than what our consultants gave us. I put $600,000 in there just because he didn't include one thing we needed, and also just a bit of extra cash, just so we're safe. So that is the cost difference between the two. So the question is, if we had to go with this, and if we got no money from anyone else, from the government or from anyone else, how can we afford this, and how affordable is it? We expect our annual fee revenue to start at around $550,000 a year. We are planning to be able to set up, in our budget, we have a structural $360,000 that we can afford to set aside each year currently. We'd like to reduce that, but if we have to, we could put aside that much. So that means we could put towards a loan $910,000 a year if we wanted to. If we did that, we'd pay it back within 5 years. If we just used the fee revenue, it would take us 8 years to pay back the loan. And if we decided not to charge a fee, this is what's most interesting, we could still pay it back, it would just be 17 years. So it's still under a reduced scope, would be much more affordable, much less. It would not be a big thing for us to do at all, to be honest with you. Alright. So that's, before we move on to the next slide, any questions so far? This is the reason we're clear is also my question.
I'm certainly no expert in this Alberta financial and
capital finance code.
Right. Given the sort of atmosphere of political change and stability, have you anticipated or is there a possibility of any sort of political changes to that program, or is that just out of the realm?
At the provincial level?
Yes.
None that I'm aware of. ACFA is established by legislation, so it's a legislative corporation. And we haven't heard anything about that. One of the people who worked with on this project on the university side is their capital financing guy, Matthew Hagenmarketer, who's also on the board of ACFA. And I've actually met with him and the university facilities and operations guys to talk about what kind of issues are we going to have. So he doesn't, I'm not going to say they're working some things they have, like how do we account for this? And the university can't loan the SU money, so how do we explain this? So I'm not saying there aren't some things to resolve, but we seem to have resolved them fairly amicably and easily. And he has not raised any flags for me that ACFA is in jeopardy in any way.
Mark?
Yes.
Why is such a huge chunk of phase two so expendable? I mean, if it can be done.
So expensive?
No, so expendable. Projected $11 million and it can be done with $1 million, then what's that big difference there?
The big difference is this area and all of this. This atrium's expensive, this outside part is expensive, and this is a huge amount of area, extra area to renovate. It doesn't look like it on here, but if you were to, and this was, if you were to say this part, these parts here were $1 million, you've got another probably $4 million just in interior renovations. So it adds up really fast. That's why it's more expensive. We can meet this, we may be able to meet the bare requirements, but we won't be able to meet them optimally. For example, in the referendum, we have to have a certain number of meetings. Well, if we do the original plan, we can have some big ones. One will be almost as big as this room when it's showing up. If we don't, we can have the same rooms, but they're going to be like closets. So a lot of it has to do with the quality of what we do. And it wouldn't be doing much to improve our accessibility or visibility of our student services. We would need the barest requirements. It wouldn't actually advance our program as much as we would like to. Great.
I have a question. How much of the budget, to the best of your knowledge, is going towards assembly fixing things compared to like actually structurally changing things?
That's a very good question. I'm going to ballpark it, and I will say that the atrium part, which is the real kind of fancy part, the entrance part and that, is probably costing us between $1.5 and $2 million. That could be, and one of the things that we will cut if we start to go over budget is we will cut, we will change the way that we're doing the glass, because we're doing the glass in a slightly more expensive way, so that it looks better. We've chosen this, though, for somewhat aesthetic reasons, but also something else. When I was traveling in Europe, I read a book called The Architecture of Happiness by Alain de Botton. And he talked about the importance of architecture. Architecture in places don't make you in anything, but they bring things out in you. And I think it's really important, and we are maybe felt it was important, council last year felt it was important. I said such a same story of council last year. Is that when students come to the building, we want them to feel not like it's second rate. We want it to be aspirational and to be inspiring to them as well. And what this book talked about was how the quality of space and the environment set within a space affect how people view themselves and how they act in the world. So we try to create with our architecture something that first respects history. We have one of the last great examples of neo-nationalist architecture in the city. So we picked a kind of an atrium which is using a glass treatment which minimizes the amount of obstruction of the original building. We picked, there's an overhang on it, there's kind of a, I don't know what you call it, a kind of a roof over top of the atrium. And it's in order for dramatic effect, because we want people to feel that this is something, a special kind of place. So, yes, we could cut some of those things and we would save some money, but I don't, that wouldn't be a radical amount.
So the majority of the budget is going to
And renovations, like new paint, new tiles, new walls, that kind of thing. It's going to look really nice, though. It's going to look really nice. Our cost this year, related to, compared to what the university pays on a lot of their projects, on a per square foot basis, our government stuff is a lot cheaper than, say, the disco. Like, a lot. So, but it's one that you pay, it is however much you pay to build a house. And that has to do with institutional. The institution has a lot of rules, and following those rules sometimes costs us time. So, and by the way, if you have ever any thoughts about the design or the architecture, any questions, or want any more details, you can always send me an email or drop them in the office.
Mr. Dumichon, I'm just going to let you know that you're at about the 24-minute mark out of 30 minutes, unless at the 30-minute mark someone would wish to make a motion to extend.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering what, you might have mentioned it, but I missed it, the V plus OP count, what is OP count?
Operating contribution.
Okay.
So that's money taken directly from our budget.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, they've already approved a fee for it. Do you mean beyond that?
I guess I wasn't aware of the fee.
Okay. So there was a fee that was voted last year. It's $9 per term. It's more, a little more generic than just the building. It says students in facilities at 2X. It was done that way, so there was a bit of flexibility because we weren't sure exactly what we were doing at the time. And that fee cannot be, once we go into a long-term financial arrangement, cannot be rescinded until we've paid off our obligation. When that obligation is paid off, council will have a decision to make whether to retain that fee as a capital future capital expansion fee or to terminate. But that'll be, that's an issue 20 years down the road. So fees will go up. Now, I will note this, however, though. Unlike most other projects, we are actually out of our operating contributing $360,000. The only reason we're doing the fee is to pay a city about that. And that's why. And we try to keep it, we kept it to under $10. Like, so it's $9. But not too much. Not so people can use the facility to teach that. Okay. So the last thing I want to note, this is almost a little bit, just a little bit late. I want to make you aware, because I have your attention for a few minutes here, and you can ask any questions about this. Since our budget was passed, we also have some changes to our overall capital plans that I want to make you aware of. First, I don't know if some of you are aware, but we're going to be doing rack kitchen renovations this summer. They were originally rolled into the renovation plan. Because the documents we submitted to the university didn't include them, we've taken it out of the plan. They run higher than expected. I will also note, though, that the numbers that I've given you for the phase one are actually running lower than expected. I haven't included what we've actually saved. The numbers are actually down some. We have the same contractor doing both. We are saving money on both projects a little bit because we're using the same, we're doing it at the same time. We do not expect this to affect our base budget. So we don't expect this to have any material impact on the end of the year position of the student. We also, we don't know what it's going to be at rate for next year. We're expecting a 5-day early, so that means somewhere below, like I would expect around the mid-50s. Expense to retrofit the job space. We're not able to obtain a good coffee vendor offer. So we're going to move the cram gun and juicy operations into that space. So you can make your juicy, your smoothie, or your coffee, or your hot chocolate, or all together in one place. And it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. If you have any great ideas for names of the place, though, we'd like to rebrand it. So let me know, fire them up an email, or drop an email saying, we should call it. Now, I wanted to call it Good Meal. No one likes this. But Good Meal, because it's good, healthy food, and evil spaces. Honestly, I don't want to do that anymore, because no one really takes off one. But I love it. finally, we may come back to council and explain the capital costs we may incur. Again, we'll pay for it with out of the enhancement for the civil, but we are going to explore, depending on how the food court does an extra main meal vendor. We are looking at perhaps dividing the travel cut space, reducing the amount of space out of the travel cuts, and bringing in another vendor of some sort, who we can charge more per square foot rent for. So that would be, but we haven't decided to do that yet. We want to see how the market develops first. So that was, that's it. If you have any questions, or Josh wants to add anything.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Dubuchel. Okay, and as Mr. Dubuchel mentioned, you can certainly email him or Vice President Lay if you have questions or would like a little bit more information. Mark's email address is mark@su.org. Okay, with that, we will continue along with our order paper. As we always do, we will deal with nominations immediately following presentations, and we have two nominations. Let's go down in here. So we have item 7A, Lay moves to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Alberta Public Interest Research Group Board of Directors. Do we have a seconder for that motion? Thank you, Councillor Hamid. Thank you. Vice President Lay to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had one family councillor resigned from the position, so we need to refill the spot. And it's our eighth period in the Alberta Public Interest Research Group, and there were a few pure scientific ones for the students. And it's me that SU or the student councillor that then the spot paper for. And if Board of Governors Rev Kelly or Councillor Mahogan would like to speak more about it. Yeah. But yeah, we've got a lot of nominations over the past few weeks. So.
Okay, thank you. You may recall, as the Vice President said, this came up. However, if you have any additional questions or you weren't here last time, by all means, I would invite you to propose any questions to Vice President Lay now. Seeing none, we will open the floor to nominations. Governor Kelly.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Patel.
Councillor Patel, do you accept? Okay. Any further nominations? Seeing none, we will close nominations. Congratulations to Councillor Patel. With that, we move to item 7B. Chelan moves that Students' Council appoint two members of Students' Council to the Dye Board Tribune Selection Committee. Do we have a seconder for this motion? Vice President Woods, thank you. Vice President Chelan to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, as per bylaw 1500, Students' Council has a separate judicial system called the Discipline Interpretation and Enforcement Board, so lovingly referred to as the DIE Board. You go there to appear in trouble or have a complaint, so they have a name. It consists of tribunals for nine members of Students' Council, more the executive and neutral adjudicators of cases. And it's responsibility of a small committee that consists of two tribunals, two executives, and two councillors to select the tribunals, as well as the chief and associate chief tribunals for the next year. And the bylaw 1500 requires student councillors to nominate two councillors. So, overall, I would say minimal time within three meetings of an hour and a half perhaps throughout the year.
Are there any questions for Vice President Chelan? Councillor Speakman?
Are the meetings for that throughout the year?
And perhaps I'll pretend that was point of information and take that as well. As Vice President Chelan alluded to, the meetings are informal. The meetings only basically take place when there are vacancies, and so tribunes have to be appointed or a chief tribune needs to be appointed because there's a vacancy. So. Further questions? Councillor Zhang?
How long are the chief and chief tribune on?
Do you want me to take that? That's another point of information. Dye Board tribunes, their appointment works slightly differently than typical appointments for a variety of reasons, because tribunes, Dye Board typically operates a little bit sort of outside of the rest of the, they're sort of, as we mentioned, the judicial branch to go along with the executive, which is the executive, and the legislative, which is you guys. As such, Dye Board tribunes are actually appointed until graduation, or in, like basically until they're no longer members of the Students' Union, unless they resign beforehand. There may be a way in which they can be removed before that, although I'm not totally certain. I'm not aware of it. If someone's really curious about that, you could certainly rise on a point for that. But yes, so they are appointed until they are no longer students in most cases, or no longer undergraduate students in most cases. Any further questions? All right, seeing none, we will open the floor to nominations. Councillor Nguyen?
I nominate Councillor Bannister.
Councillor Bannister, do you accept?
I accept.
All right. Councillor Humming, do you
accept? I'd like to nominate Councillor Hodgson.
Councillor Hodgson, do you accept?
I do.
Okay. Councillor Muhammad? Okay, and I'm assuming you accept. Any further nominations? Vice President Lay?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Zing.
Councillor Zing, do you accept? Any further nominations? Vice President Lay?
No, sir.
Okay. Any further nominations? Seeing none, we will close nominations. Ooh, and this is one of those exciting times where we have more nominations than we have seats for, so we'll actually have a formal vote on this. So just to give you background again on this, we did this once before, but basically what we'll do is we'll allow each candidate to speak for about 30 seconds. In fact, I'll make it precisely 30 seconds. And they'll basically have a chance to sell their case to you, if you will. And after that time, once they've all spoken through, we'll do a private vote. Because there's two spots available, you'll each actually have the opportunity to vote up to two times, if you so choose. So let me just get my stopwatch ready here. And with that, we'll begin in the order of nomination. So, Councillor Bannister, you have 30 seconds.
Hello, everyone. So, I don't know, this sounds really interesting to me. I think in general I have good judgment, so I think I could be, like, I could contribute and represent the board quite nicely. And, yeah, I'm generally pretty reliable, so I could definitely think I could make all the time commitments, and I think the fact that you're in it until you graduate is pretty sweet, so, yes.
Thank you. Councillor Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reason I would like to sit on the selection committee is I've never really been involved with Dye Board before. I haven't gone to Dye Board yet, and cross my fingers I don't this year. But I would like to learn a little bit more about how it works. I'm pretty involved already, but this sounds like a pretty little time commitment as you just meet whatever you do as a vacancy. So I would really like the opportunity to try out the judicial branches of the SU.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Mohammed.
I thought it was really interesting in terms of morals. I find that I have a strong moral compass and hopefully I'll use that on Dye Board. In terms of time, I think the time commitments, in terms of experience, I don't know what this is, but I've worked in the provincial before. I've also been arrested before, so.
Councillor Speakman?
Yeah, I have more information.
Okay.
Are the nominations to be on Dye Board or to select other people?
This is a nomination to select other people to be on Dye Board.
Right.
So hopefully that was clear. So this is the selection committee for tribunes and not actually appointment as tribune. This is an appointment to the tribune selection committee. So apologize if there was any confusion there. Okay, lastly, Councillor Zing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, when I first heard about the Dye Board, I thought, you know, they have the positions of Chief Tribune and Tribune. And when I first thought, was, wow, now that's a really cool name. It's a really cool name, and it's a really cool title. And so, I like to be on the Dye Board because it's important for selecting an appropriate Tribune, and I do have the ability to be involved.
Thank you. And apologies, I was working the screens there as you guys were going. I just had to sort of unduplicate my screen so that Councillor Champagne can vote privately. So that's what was going on there, if you were curious. So with that, we'll resort to our good old-fashioned heads down, hands up when you want to vote. And if we have any guests around, if you wouldn't mind just putting your heads down as well, just so that, you know. And you get to vote, yeah, if you're curious. Yeah. Proxies get to vote. So, as I mentioned, you get up to two votes. You don't have to use both, but you certainly can if you so choose. Councillor Champagne, if you just want to basically give, just so that I know who you're voting for, just type the people's names that you want to vote for whenever you want. Your screen is private right now, so you can do that any time. For the rest of you, as I mentioned, I'll give everyone's name. Please raise your placards all the way up, and then vote no more than two times. So we'll go in the same order. Councillor Bannister. Raise your placards. Please raise your placards all the way up, just so I, so I'm, it's what will kind of happen. Thank you, Councillor Hodgson. Thank you, Councillor Mohammed. And Councillor Zhang. Thank you. You can put your placards down and put your hands up, and I'll just wait for Councillor Champagne. Thank you for Councillor Champagne's votes. Okay, congratulations to Councillors Hodgson and Mohammed. Okay, with that, we will continue on with our order paper. With that, we'll move to item 6A. Again, if you're looking for this in your order paper, it's actually on the late editions, and it's noted as item 6C, but we're going to call it 6A. Chellen moved that, we'll call it moves that, upon the recommendation of the Policy Committee, Students' Council amend the Fall Reading Week policy in first reading based on the following principles: that the Students' Union will advocate for the creation of a Fall Reading Week that does not specify a particular implementation schedule. Do we have a second for that motion? Councillor Redmond, thank you very much. Second to that. Now, I'm just going to go through really briefly with you guys, because I think this is the first time. Vice President Chellen.
Yeah. Executive reports come after special orders. Sorry,
that point is well taken. Look at me, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we'll move over there. Thank you very much, Vice President Chellen. I'm getting ahead of myself. So thank you very much. We'll move back to exec committee reports. Thank you. Any oral reports from the executive committee? Vice President Chellen?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe I raised council earlier. If not, I raised policy committee that the university president, Dr. Ndira Samuel-Sekra, was planning on creating a task force to review academic governance, and in particular, find ways to take administrative tasks out of university governance and GFC and into the hands of university vice presidents and president. And we were concerned that task force only included two professors and one undergraduate or graduate student after a number of phone calls and some, I think, strong lobbying by all of the students at GFC, including a student, undergraduate and graduate on the task force to review governance, and I really hopeful that that will improve how academic governance functions from the students' perspective, and we can take a look at really why more students aren't running for GFC, what some of the barriers are, things like timing of GFC processes. So just a quick win for students that are in attendance.
Thank you very much. President Kuzma, did I see your hand up?
Yeah. So I just want to say thanks a lot again to everyone who came up to Gal Camp. It was a blast for those of you who could have made it. It's all good. We have fall retreats in September, October. We don't go up to camp, etc., but we do have a session to join. I'm pretty sure you guys can get the materials later on. And we'll make sure to include you guys in our game of werewolf. Which is a blast. So anyways, you guys can read about my report. Some things that I wanted to add is, luckily we'll be having
I think you have a date nailed down. On July 16th, we'll have the acting provost, Smart Person Health, present to Students Council about budget and other matters related. So that's July 16th. On July 2nd, us executives, we're planning a delivery presentation council about the budget, so we can give you guys our perspective before the acting provost presents to you guys. That way, you guys can have the opportunity to develop some really strong and good questions and engage in really meaningful discussion with the acting provost. Regards to newsletters, we've hammered away within our team of these meetings and in the general faculty council. So those who were there, you guys kind of witnessed the reaction we got. It's kind of, we don't want to release this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a great, let's say, it being a sort of positive sense of disharmony and grip in the faculty? Because you're not getting equal cuts to the budgets. So that's the kind of action to be able to lot. And that's pretty much everything on my side. For cause, the provincial advocacy organization, which I'm sure was a sixth candidate for our executive director position, so we're going to do interviews relatively soon. And let's see. That's pretty much it. And then rebuilding the relationship that we have with the data students by meeting with Neil and more. Thanks.
4 seconds to spare. Thank you, President Kuzma. Any other exec reports? Oh, there you go. Vice President Lay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick update on my end. The sub-renovation of towers has begun. They're going to be serving the third, fourth, and sixth floor. But making an update on my little photo blog, which is, as I promised, it's on the SU page. And so you can hunt through the links there. And in the summertime, we're exploring how to best use that. So there'll be some trial and error. If you have any feedback for me, let me know. If you want to hear more about the operations and finance stuff, send me those.
Thank you. Any other exec reports? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to board and committee reports. Any committee chairs that wish to report? Councillor Borden?
I'm happy to talk about joint kind of policy for the Department of Health and Human Services. We've been working on that for the last
Thank you, and a reminder to council that unlike the other committees, all members of council are voting members of the council administration committee. Vice President Lay, I'm not sure which committee or both.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So my update is for the grant allocation committee. We're having a meeting on Thursday at 5 o'clock, but this meeting will have two presentations from Serena Ellison and Haley Markowski, the manager and assistant manager of the financial aid office, and they'll be presenting about the Access Fund and the Students Union Award. So if you would like to hear or learn more about that stuff, that's, I can send you the agenda, but that's on Thursday at 5 p.m.
Thank you. Any other committee chairs' reports? Seeing none, we will move on to question period. So, soliciting questions. Not all at once, everyone. Thank you, Councillor Hamlin.
I was wondering, Coslaw snuck in allegedly because he received a better offer from somewhere else. I was wondering if you guys have kind of sweetened the deal with the executive director for Cos to make sure that they retain somebody that has that kind of skill.
Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I might defer at the end to President Kuzma, depending on how well I cover this. Yes, I can't really comment on why Mr. Wuhatsik left Paz. That was his own motivation. However, with that being said, I can assure the group that we did look at how we might be able to improve certain aspects of the Paz director position. One of the areas was looking at increase in pay, which did end up happening. However, at the same time, we must remain conscious that we are a student-run organization. It's not exactly as if we are wallowing in cash flow, so we have to be very cautious about how much we're paying, and I mean, realistically, each school between us, Lethbridge and Calgary, we all pay about, I think, $47,000 in fees to cost, and realistically, between the three of us, that doesn't accumulate very much, especially when you consider operating expenses and running the office and everything else that we have. So yes, there was some financial increase. We looked at other ways to improve the position. Realistically, though, I mean, it's obvious if we're looking for, you know, somebody with a PhD to take this position, it needs to be somebody that is, you know, aware of student politics, is passionate about the position, and unfortunately, one of the drawbacks of working in this position is that you are going to receive probably less pay than you would work in some areas. But again, that is a common position, and I'll look for a counselor, president, for the rest of that.
Yeah, again, if you want to find out exactly this is why you left, you can go ask him yourself. But he's been telling us for a couple of years now that he's been wanting to move on. He had the same, using the same spot for 9 years. So that's kind of, and it's just in that particular position, it's kind of, with an ED of an atmosphere organization like that, that's kind of unheard of normally. So that's why we remind the patients kind of. He's been telling us for a while, he wanted to move on, and I don't know what that's like, right? So it's going to be.
Thank you. Councillor Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Vice President Chung. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the amendment you proposed at the TBAC MBAC meeting you attended. I believe you were there, or it was in President Peterson's report. But if you could just elaborate on that a little bit.
Vice President Chung.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm assuming you're referring to TBAC MBAC, but downtown planning committee. For those of you that don't know, TBAC MBAC is a tuition and internal instructional budget advisory committee. What I believe Councilor Rogerson is referring to is the amendment that I made on the floor of the Act on Planning Committee to reinsert the words non-permanent in front of the words like a cost fee. The university knew it was a sneaky play, and that originally the cost fee was billed as a temporary fee to get the university out of a budget crisis back in 2009. It was always meant to be a temporary fee, in other words, non-permanent, that appears in their plans ever since. This year they sneakily pulled out that word as a way to emphasize that the fee would be a more permanent fee. I amended and moved to amend the document called the Comprehensive Institutional Plan on the floor of APC, voted down 5-3. From my understanding, addressing a friendly amendment was ultimately made it to the board level. So, once again, the cost fee has been reaffirmed as being a non permanent fee, which is great work by our president.
Thank you. Councillor Mohammed.
This question is for anyone who's at the DOC meeting. Can someone inform me about how the discussion went on the Dean's letters and like what happened or did you know about that discussion?
Do you perhaps want to direct that to President Kuzma? Or?
Yeah, sure. So the point that I brought up to the acting provost is that his rationale is that all the faculties got different cuts, right? Which is something that they don't normally do. They originally were like, okay, all across the board cuts, everyone's been mixed in. But with having different cuts for each faculty, the point that he raises, you know, if it's public, there's going to be a lot of infighting between the different faculties. It would cause a sense of disharmony with an institution and would be really strong to the institution moving forward, especially with the budget situation that they have, if there's a lot of inquiry between different faculty. So the rationale is we don't want to release this information to cause a sense of inquiry. It's like, okay, well, sure. But, you know, the different stakeholders, the leaders of the stakeholders, are privy to confidential information all the time, right? Why can't we simply be privy to this kind of confidential? And why do you think this community all of a sudden? And he didn't really, in my opinion, give us a good answer. He just kind of kept carrying it back home that, again, we need to watch out. This is disharmony. This is a very sensitive topic. And if you want, you can approach the dean yourself to see what information they're willing to give to you.
It's in the means court. It's essentially what he's saying. Like, if they want to do two, they can. If not, whatever. So the faculty of arts and science, their deans have made some of their information public in the letters about, for instance, TA and RA funding, teaching assistant and research assistant funding, right? And that is the choice of those dean of arts and science to do that. But we were told in our TBAC and that meeting, our tuition and medical on the structural meeting, that the dean's letters contain some information that may not be relevant, may contain some information to be like, oh, hire this specific individual or whatever. So the rationale we got was, you know what, not all this information is relevant for you guys. Like, okay, I don't necessarily care if you want to get appointed or hired, I don't care about this budget information. You guys perhaps give us a summary version of Dean's letters that contains the relevant information for us, right? If you don't want to give us exact letters, sure, at least give us a budget version of that letter. And we can kind of let's say match. So we're getting kind of still involved quite a bit on that. And again, it's about approaching the individual deans, it seems like. Is how they're approaching it. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess, the next step right now. So.
Okay, do you have any
questions? Can I? Yeah. Can I respond to that as well? Just from what I thought, as Nick said, the acting provost said that they didn't want to come to disharmony and because it's very context sensitive. And then I don't know if it's yourself or there's another faculty member or whatever. Also asked the question saying, okay, well, why do you also release whatever the sort of context decision making process, and his, from what I saw, the big response was, well, we've never shared that kind of information before.
Yeah. So. That was a really good point about the context. You can't bring that up and be like, oh, well, if you guys just look at it, you know, without any context, then you guys can draw perhaps incorrect conclusions. And all of a sudden, it's just going to, you know, cause a mess. And I was like, why don't you just provide us the context? Well, it's really not going to be answered.
Thank you. Councillor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can you hear me?
Yep.
My question is for President Guzman. In regards to the South Asian about the Collegial Center of Alberta that is on the chopping block, later this year, students who are future potential students who are signing up for this program are paying faculty fees and are paying student services fees at the moment, but their program is on the chopping block for now. Since they are paying student services fees, do they fall under our jurisdiction and should we represent them? Thank you.
Thanks. President Kuzma, do you perhaps want to answer that at the podium just so that Councillor Champagne can hear a clear answer from the microphone here?
Hey, Colin, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, thanks for the question. I'm not, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not completely familiar on this issue. If you want to send a written question so I can kind of get a little bit more, I don't know, information back to you and the rest of the council, that'd be great. I don't know if Dustin has any relevant information on this item. But yeah, if you have any more information, please send it over that way. And I don't know, we rely on you councillors to give us information as well. So thanks for putting this on our radar.
Thank you. And this serves as another great reminder from myself that I too encourage written questions, and you'll often get even more detailed answers than you might otherwise get. Vice President Lau. Oh, I'm sorry. Perhaps I'll clarify when there's a question being answered. I'm not able to sort of open it up to dialogue, if you will. The only way that you can sort of share a speaking turn is if the speaker defers to you. So if you're looking to speak on the topic and you can sort of flag down the attention of the speaker and they want to defer their time to you, then you can defer the time. So that's how that would normally work. Is that a question or a point? Question, okay. Councillor Battelle.
This question is for Vice President Woods. I was
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the excellent question. That process at the moment is very much up in the air, and it will be decided for a little while here. There have been, the Students' Union has looked into certain methods of pursuing a referendum process. We're also looking at other models. Ontario, for example, has a very interesting system where, in order for management of our company to be approved, the Student Association has to sign off on it, which I never had put in place. However, at this point, especially with our goals of hopefully making this an issue with the PSLA, we need to not only have our own thoughts and ideas in it, but we need the thoughts and ideas of other student associations. We're talking ASAC, which is another provincial lobby group, as well as AGC, which are the graduate provincial lobby group. And we also need to see what resonates with the government. I mean, obviously, they have to be on board with it. So it's a very collaborative process. I can't exactly go in there and say it must go to the student referendum and it must be voted on by students because they might not be privy to that. However, any steps for student approval are something that we strive for, and whatever we can get for students on that is what we'll be achieving. Obviously, a referendum process, like we do RFPs, where before a fee is approved, it must be voted on by the majority of students. It'd be ideal, but is it realistic? I personally don't think so. It depends on what the government and what other student stakeholders think. So at this point, it's really just waiting to see what we hear ideal, and hopefully we'll be able to get some traction on this within the next year. Certainly we'll be able to get traction on this. I'm already getting communications from ASAC schools presenting ideas. So thank you for the question. I hope I can adequately answer it.
Thank you. Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Vice President Lau. Can you please elaborate upon the context you were going to speak about earlier?
Yeah, it was just that Dr. Martin brings them out. That's why I know if we release these things that were resolved, we wouldn't have the context attached to it, and it would be like and that even with the answers, he addressed the context side of it, wasn't something we had done before, and just kind of going back to harmony.
Thank you. Councillor Vinchuk?
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Klang.
My question is to Vice President Lee. So you mentioned in your executive decision that was a conflict of interest. So is there another checkpoint that could perhaps stop it from happening, or is that just it?
Vice President Lee.
Thank you for the question. In short, no. I don't think so. The Giga Report has decided to go to the media, and so at this point, we're just figuring out the specifics of the contract. I know that the negotiations went better, but I think due to the previous relationship with the actual under the current Giga Report, I think our negotiating position was compromised a bit. And so I think at the very least, it's only a 1-year contract, so we'll see what will happen. But I don't think there is much more that we can. I've expressed my concerns over the deal, but then we gave it more. It's best to move forward with the media, try it out for a year, and then reevaluate before the contract expires. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, 15 minutes have lapsed, so we will close question period unless I see 5 minutes to extend. Vice President Woods. I have one speaker currently on my speakers list. I have no speakers on my speakers list, which perhaps changed the game a little bit. I don't see 5 placards, so speakers. Question period would be over anyway, so we're out of questions. So. With that, now I'll move back to where I previously got ahead of myself. Thank you, Vice President Chellen, for calling me off on a point of order. I encourage any of you to do so if I'm doing something I'm not supposed to. With that, we'll move to item 6A. Chellen, and I'll take Councillor Redmond a second from before, moves that on the recommendation of the Policy Committee, Students' Council amend the Fall Reading Week policy and first reading based on the following principles. That the Students' Union will advocate for the creation of a Fall Reading Week that does not specify a particular implementation structure. Now, to give you a little bit of context, because I don't believe that we've looked at a change to a bylaw or a policy yet this year, I'll give you a little bit of an idea of how this process works. It's outlined in standing orders as well, so you're welcome to take a read through there if you want. But they actually require what are called first and second reading. So this is the same for both bylaws and for policy changes. The only difference is when they go to committee, policy changes go to policy committee and bylaws go to bylaw committee. But what happens is when they're first presented, they're presented in first reading and you have principles in front of you. So not the sort of technical changes, you know, scratch out this word, add this clause, remove that clause, that sort of thing. Just a general principle as to basically the statements. And you can have more than one principle, but basically the statements as to what you want the change to be or what you want the new rule to be or whatever the case may be. You're not allowed to use the specific language that you want. So you're not allowed to say a principle, you know, I want to remove section 16 or something like that. You need to find a principled way of saying so. And of course, I can assist any of you that ever require that. When that happens, it goes to the relevant committee, either policy or bylaw committee. They take those principles and then they make the technical changes to the document. So they decide, based on the principles, okay, this needs to be struck or this needs to be added or we need to move this clause around or whatever the case may be. After which time, it comes back to Students' Council in what's called second reading. And in second reading, debate, in first reading, debate can be about basically the merits of the principle, so whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea or whatnot. In second reading, debate is only confined to whether or not the committee accurately reflected the principles that you passed in first reading. So you can't just debate again in second reading if you just don't like it. The purpose of second reading and debate in second reading is to see, you know, whether or not the technical changes that were made accurately reflect the principles that we passed in first reading. So what would happen is if this motion were to pass, it would be referred to the policy committee, drafted for the specific changes brought back in second reading. Once a bill, if it's a bylaw or a motion, if it's policy is passed in second reading, then the policy change or the rule change takes effect. If anyone has any question about that, feel free to rise right now on a point of parliamentary inquiry. But if not, we will proceed to the motion. So with that, I'll allow Vice President Challen to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You're actually just introducing right now, so there's no real time limit, but if you keep going on, I'm going to cut you off eventually.
I was going to say, I'm going to explain the entire history of forwarding because I only have 6 minutes, but perhaps the Speaker would have been covered the past 5 years since the forwarding. I'm joking. It's been a lot of work for successive SC presidents to run on a platform of forwarding to your group's students, don't we? And they ratified a policy on forwarding. It's one of many policies you can check when you take a look at our policy manually. The amendment that you see coming here today is this on the principle of providing the effective less bounds on how a forwarding should be structured. The way policy currently reads, it states exactly how a full reading week would be implemented. It states that a full week without instruction would take place concurrent with the Vermont and State holiday. An instruction in the fall term will commence when possible on the Tuesday following Labor Day, and the study break at the end of each of fall term, excluding consolidated exams, will be reduced from 4 to 3 calendar days. That's a very, very specific policy that gives us very, very specific bounds in which we can work. What we've heard from both deans and the provost, and it's the provost of the university that's final authority on whether or not fall reading week happens, what we've heard from them is they need more options.
Vice President Challen, I'm going to remind you this is an introduction and you're starting to creep into debate.
Of course, they need more options than this, and so what we have, or what you see in front of you, is saying yes, fall reading week has value, but it removes those specific limitations on by which a quality needs to occur.
Thank you. And again, just a friendly reminder that introductions are intended to provide information as to more or less the effect that this would have, and then if you want to speak as to why you think it's a good idea or the rationale behind it, then you can enter debate. And of course, if you are the mover of the motion, when I ask for debate and you put up your hand, I'll always recognize you first to see what the first option is to be. With that, is there any debate on this motion? Vice President Woods?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just briefly speak in favor of this motion, and hopefully provide a little bit more opinionated context here. As Mr. Chellen outlined earlier, this is just an amendment to the original policy that was very rigid. It had a very specific method of how we should go about lobbying for it and how it should look if we were to succeed. Having spent the last year on the committee with the Vice President of Academic that dealt with trying to implement it, only came up once, I learned right away that it's very hard to negotiate for something that is this big of a change to the university structure. There are some deans that are always not going to be in favor of it. However, in order for us to be successful towards actually achieving a fall rating, we need to show that we're flexible. We need to show the university that we're willing to negotiate with them, that we're not going to have the stonewall stance that is currently reflected in the policy, and that in order for us to actually achieve a fall rating, we need to be able to work with the university a little bit more, and the current policy does not allow us to do that. It makes it very specific of what we have to lobby for. So this won't change much. I assume we'll still lobby for a full week. I assume we'll still be lobbying for programming to take place during that week. We'll still be lobbying for all the good things the fall reading week has. We're just going to be providing the flexibility to the university they need to actually make it happen.
Thank you. Councillor Bannister.
I don't know if this is an appropriate question to ask for this amendment, so if it's not, let me know, and I will ask it over the vote, if you will. So, I don't know the answer to this. How much would a fall reading approximately cost us? Because I'm assuming we'd have to start a week earlier, or something to make up the time. Is that not the case? It costs us nothing. We save money. We lose money.
All right. So, again, you can throw questions out, but they're questions for the floor, and then future speakers can answer the questions as they go. Any further debate on your turn?
No.
Okay. Councillor Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was just curious, by removing any specific particular implementation structure, are we still advocating for an actual week? Are we guaranteed, is that what we're going for still? A week off school, or could we be conceding to, I guess, varying amounts of time off school? Does the policy reflect that? As well as, are there any, other than I realize this gives us a better bargaining position, but I just like to hear some of the drawbacks. Like, this is our deal case for implementing a reading week, but I guess, yeah, what are some of the drawbacks associated with possibly moving to a more fluid stance?
Thank you very much, Councillor. And before I move on, I'm going to take this opportunity, based on the first part of Councillor Hodgson's question about the asking about basically effects of a motion like this, just to also let you know, in our friendly neighborhood educational sessions here, that when we are, it's important that Council believes, whenever we're debating principles, that the principles reflect what it is that you want to do. So what I mean by that is debate can sort of go back and forth, and people can sort of say what they believe the intent of the principles are. That being said, it's policy that basically gets to determine the policy committee that basically gets to determine the actual changes that are made. And it's possible if, and I'm not suggesting that's necessarily the case here, but it's possible that if a principle is poorly worded or it's too vague or something like that, that policy could interpret it in a different way than perhaps one of you might envision. But if it's more or less, and if council agrees in second reading that it reflects the principles that were printed, then it can be approved. So it's important to note that while debate can go on in terms of what we think the intent is, it is in fact the particular text and not the debate as a whole that is tasked to policy committee. So with that, I'll move on to President Kuzma.
Thanks for the questions. In regards to cost, the fall reading week, our proposal is essentially slicing certain days at the beginning of the semester, at the end of the semester, and also trying to rearrange some of the fall reading that we have inside. So currently with our proposal, we start school a day earlier. So we'll cut our orientation from 2 days to 1 day. We also push back inter-exams by 1 day. In addition to that, and with that, we'll have enough days off to actually combine it with the current holidays. So Labor Day is the one that we normally combine it with. Remembrance Day in November, and that's kind of what the proposal is. So by us actually trying to squeeze a day off here and then front end and at the tail end, we can actually create a leak. And with this proposal, it gives us a little bit more options of how we can do that. In terms of drawbacks, I mean, by us having a more flexible stance, the drawbacks of having any flexibility is the fact that, you know, there's a possibility of you being able to compromise a little bit. And I think in order for us to achieve a really big objective like this, I think a little compromise is a bad issue, isn't a big issue. November is the date. We chose to have a reading week in November, a holiday week in November, because with Remembrance Day, the holiday that we currently have there, it's really easy to squeeze in an extra 2 days so we can have just a full week off, right? So we already have the days off. All we're saying is, like, can we just get an extra 2 days? And that way it's a full week. And the reason we had it again right after Remembrance Day is because we have those days off. But ideally, I think the best scenario in my personal opinion would be if we can have it perhaps at the end of October. That would be the best timing for students. But again, that's not reflected as a possibility if we don't have the possibility to be flexible, right? And again, by having it in, right after Remembrance Day, we're not cutting that number of instructional days. So we're still getting to school the same amount of days that we did the year before we could get a fall, right? So that's kind of hopefully that addresses your concerns about the cost and about the drawbacks. Oh, yes, and in terms of are we advocating for a full week, we kind of had a discussion before most of us, and yeah, our intention is to still keep it for a full week. So.
Thank you. Councilor Mohammed.
I just like to echo the statements by Vice President Woods and President Kuzma. That we agree with the point, it will shape better. Also, I'd like to call the question.
Okay, so there's a motion to call to question. Before I entertain the call to question, is there anyone that wishes to speak against the motion? Because I haven't heard anyone speak against the motion yet. Seeing none, in that case, I will allow the call to question. Standing orders allows me to refuse a call to question when I feel an item hasn't been sufficiently debated. So that's why I ask if there's anyone opposed. With that, so again, call to question is basically just a vote to ask whether we want to vote on it immediately. So call to question, I believe, requires a two-thirds majority. Well, let's double-check. So I get back in the hang of this. Yes, two-thirds majority. Not debatable, not amendable. So all those in favor of calling to question? Any opposed? Okay, that motion's carried. We will call to question. So again, item 6A, Chellen Redmond moves that upon the recommendation of the Policy Committee, Students' Council amend the fall reading week policy in first reading based on the following principles. That the Students' Union will advocate for the creation of a fall reading week but does not specify a particular implementation schedule. All those in favor of item 6A? Any opposed? Okay, that motion is carried. Thank you very much. With that, I believe we are at the end of our order paper, so I would look favorably upon a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Vice President Woods, Councillor Patel seconds. All those in favor? That motion is carried. Thank you very much. We will take attendance before we adjourn. President Kuzmu.
President.
Vice President Chellen.
President.
Vice President Woods.
IEC.
Vice President Lay.
President.
Vice President Lau.
President.
Governor Kelly.
President.
Councillor Patel.
President.
Councillor Gordon.
President.
Councillor Mills. Councillor Hanwell.
Present.
Councillor Bannister.
Present.
Councillor Chagorin. Councillor Mohammed.
Present.
Ms. Maru for Councillor Grookey. Councillor Minarski.
Present.
Councillor Valdez.
Present.
Councillor Corbett. Councillor Redmond.
Present.
Councillor Hummey.
Present.
Councillor Morris. Councillor Nguyen.
Here.
Councillor Champagne is still here. Councillor Speakman.
Here.
Councillor Hodgson. Councillor Huang. Councillor Zhang. Councillor Greenham. Councillor Binchik. Councillor Douglas.
Yep.
Mr. Dumichel.
Here.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned at 7:27. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.